Welcome to Coon Hunting University Podcast. This is your host, Mason Bush. Class is now in session.
Fuel your dog with power. Fuel them with strength. Fuel them with Joy Super Meal 3020. Joy Super Meal is made for the hardest working dogs. With a colossal 510 kcals per cup, magnesium for muscle repair, and pumpkin for digestive health. This formula is made specifically for gaining muscle mass and added endurance. Our Super Meal 3020 is also great for breeders and offers mothers extra calcium and magnesium to assist with whelping. For dogs that work just as hard as you do, make sure to fuel them with the best. Fuel them with Joy Super Meal 3020. To learn more about Joy Super Meal 3020 or to find a dealer near you, visit joydogfood.com or give us a call at 800-245-4125.
This is Coon Hunting University Podcast. Today we have a Southern Ohio resident. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Southern Ohio, Tim Roush. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Enjoying this sunny day.
Yeah, it's been pretty the past few days. I think it's supposed to be a little warmer, a little prettier here the next couple of days.
Yep.
How you been doing these days?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm blessed better than I deserve. At 75 years old, I'm doing good.
You said you've been out of the game for a little while, so tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've coon hunted for several years back. Started in the probably early 70s and started some going to a few night hunts and didn't get treated real well. And so when the Professional Kennel Club came about, PCA started out, their goal was to kind of give everybody a fair shake. And so I got involved with them in the early 80s, started judging. And of course they had regional hunts and then things progressed and started going to the bigger hunts and judging for them and the world hunts. I enjoyed it, got along well with it. So I stayed with it for several years, met a lot of really nice coon hunters, people, several states, and made a lot of friends that are still friends today. I still visit with some on the phone and whatever. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Still hunted here local myself. And around in this area, still hunt once in a while with my son, Brian, who is still hunting. So, but over time, I guess Mother Nature and Father Times took care of a lot of that, being out late at night and walking. My legs got to giving me some trouble and had a bout with cancer. And I retired. I railroaded 35 and a half years, retired in 2008. 2009, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma cancer. So after 26 rounds of chemo and a stem cell harvest transplant, a lot of help from the great physician, I come out of the hospital and over time started getting my strength back. 9 months later, they opened me up a triple bypass.
Hmm.
And anyway, I got over all that, and I'm at it 6 days a week and church on Sunday. So I'm blessed. I can't complain a bit.
Hmm. You're a brand new man now.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Pretty much.
I also worked for the railroad for 7 years. I didn't love the lifestyle. I don't know what you've done, but I didn't love the lifestyle, and I went other routes.
Yeah, I started on track work, worked my way into operating machinery, and then they got into this deal where they wanted you to start in the southern states in the winter months and work your way north, living in a motel 4 nights a week. I told them I wasn't going to do that. And I did have to travel just a little bit. They kept making changes. And, of course, it all kept going together, buying other railroads. It wound up CSX, which is one of the two major roads east of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was away from home on a job on a machine, they the job come up close to me, 30 miles away in Maysville, Kentucky, as a maintenance welder. And I spent my last 9 years, I think, there welding, and was home every night.
That's nice.
So, I just enjoyed that. And I'd welded since high school days anyway, so I enjoyed that part of it. But operating machinery, I wasn't going to travel and live in motels for that if I could avoid it. So I didn't dislike my job, but I'd had enough dinner buckets. you can just do so much with a dinner bucket. You get a variety, and so I got tired of that. But other than that, it was good. It was good retirement, and I can't say that I disliked it. Stayed with it. And I farmed here. We bought a farm in 1971, and I'd done some farming. And then I started when I was 18 years old auctioneering with my dad, who was in the real estate and auction business. And I'm still doing sales yet today some. So I keep busy.
Yeah. You've got into antique tractors as well. Is that correct?
No, I'm into draft horses.
Draft horse. I was thinking Steve said you'd got into antique tractors.
No, I restore some old horse-drawn machinery. That's my winter months in the shop. I'll restore 4 or 5 pieces of horse-drawn machinery as well as restoring for other people. But I don't get in. I haven't got into the old tractors yet. And, that bug hadn't bit me yet. So far I've stayed away from it.
Well, you've been a hot topic to many. I know Barry Kitty, Steve Yant, Terry Nix, just to name a few there that's mentioned your name about judging cast back in the 80s and 90s. And they wanted me to reach out. And,
well, I appreciate that.
You've been hard to round up, but Steve got it done.
Yeah, we were, a matter of fact, we were in Indiana at a draft horse sale, machinery and horse sale, when he called, got a hold of me, and told me what might be up, wanted to know if I'd be interested, and I thought about it a little while, and I said, well, yeah, I'd give it a try.
Yeah.
And I'd listened to Steve's podcast a while back, and I listened to Scott and Ed Bates, and of course, known them for many years, and I enjoyed them, so I thought, well, I'd give it a whirl.
Well, take us back to some of your earlier days of coon hunting before the judging got involved, and kind of walk us through it.
Well, of course, it started small, local hunts with PCA, and then it developed, of course, on in when it went into the Professional Kennel Club, the registry, and I was an area representative for them, and back in that day, all the registered dogs had to be tattooed. The last 4 digits of the registration number had to be tattooed. So I traveled to several clubs in southern Ohio. I was a representative, and I'd set up a date with them and tattoo dogs, take care of that for them, and kind of get them started, guided on their hunts. I've traveled to some of them and judged and run my dogs in them, and got along well with that. And the tattooing actually was one fellow here in our area had a dog stolen and that I had tattooed, and he got a hold of me about a year later. They found that dog had been stolen, and he told the deputy that was investigating it to look in her ear, and he gave him the 4-digit number, last 4 digits of her registration number, and the man that had had her was—he was swearing up and down that she wasn't the dog. And when he looked in her ear, there was the 4 digits of the tattoo number, and that sealed the deal. He got his dog back.
Mm.
So I know at least one case where the tattooing, of course, they used it to make sure you were hunting the dog. We always, as judges, we check the 4 dogs' ear before we cast them, you know, and we made sure we had the right 4 dogs according to what the registration entry said.
Right.
But that actually got a friend of mine's dog back after nearly a year just by having that tattoo number in her ear. And then it transpired on, and like I said, it got into the bigger hunts. I started judging the pro hunts, blue ribbon hunts, and I would save my vacation days or whatever on the railroad and leave on Friday normally to get, I mean, we, you know, Paris, Texas, Wayland Springs, Arkansas, Alabama, you know, we were in wherever the Blue Ribbon Hunt was at, we'd get back, we'd drive down there, either leave on Thursday night or get down there on Friday and judge Friday night, Saturday night, and make it back home Sunday and go to work on Monday.
Hmm.
So
it's a rough life us coon hunters have.
Yeah, there's a few times I was up into the 30 hours. I'd go on with no sleep and still went on to the railroad. I didn't miss work because of it. You know, I went ahead and made it to work. But I remember Jacksonville, Illinois. We had a hunt out there at what do they call that, Black Diamond Ranch or something, and it was neat. This man had made a little western town, and each of the sidewalk was wood, and each room was the barber shop or the post office or the sheriff's office, and that's where you slept. That's where the beds were. And man, I was ready to get home. I remember it was Mother's Day weekend, and I had never missed seeing my mom on Mother's Day. And we got in there that morning at daylight on Sunday morning, and I'm ready to pack and head home, and we had a question. I had to sit in on a question. And we was late getting out of there, but I made it home, and I made it home that evening. Got over to see my mom on Mother's Day, and of course wife too. I'd never missed doing that, but anyway, that was part of it. But I enjoyed doing it, or I wouldn't have been going through that.
Yeah. I've judged some bigger hunts. I got to judge the finals of the PKC World year before last, and it's different. I mean, I feel like I'm just as nervous as some of the competitors out there, but it's I take pride in it.
Yep, I can relate to that. I had butterflies. You know,
there's a lot on your shoulders.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and you don't want to make a mistake. And, you know, you've got everybody wanting to win. But I got along good. Had a few questions brought in over the years, and but not very many. And, you know, I don't know how you kind of gain respect from the handlers. And they're all of them's going to, till they get to know you, they're probably going to try you a little bit. I found that out over the years.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like old Barney used to say, just nip it in the bud, and they'll go away. You don't have too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate, and you'll relate to this, anybody that listens to this podcast that is judged, the biggest thing, I guess I was lucky, I was blessed with the ability to pick out the dogs by their, once I learned their mouth quick.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the funniest stories that I ever remember was at the World Hunt, and I had four advertised stud dogs in this cast, dogs that were in the cooner, they were at stud, all known, and we turned loose, and four dogs struck. I called back the strikes, and one fella he got upset that I didn't get him in. Or I should have, and that other man struck his dog. And they sounded alike. So they all four treed, and I got the same story. I didn't call his dog back. That man treed his dog. I get it. So we get to the tree, and I tell one of them to tie their dog over to the left of the tree, and the other over on the right side. And I back up and listen to these two dogs while I'm shining the tree. And it's just an echo. Every once in a while, they'd both double up their bark, his chop mouth. They sounded just alike. The volume, I couldn't pick them apart. So anyway, we cast them again. Same thing. And this fella, he said he struck my dog, and I should have had second strike, not third. And about that time, all four of them treed, and we go into the tree, and they've got a possum treed. And so when they handled their dogs, I said to him, I said, you know, I believe you was right. I think you need to move up to second strike. And
No, now.
Yeah. He said, no, you got it. He said, Mr. Judge, you got it right. He said, you had it right. I said, well, let's do it this way then. If I've got it right this time, I'll have it right the rest of the night. I don't want to hear any more out of you about it. I said, you guys hunt these dogs 5-6 nights a week, and you can't tell them apart, and you expect me to come out here and that we was probably 20-30 minutes into the cast. And so anyway, that ended that problem. They both agreed all night, but they did. They sounded alike. And I always, you know, always tried to learn dogs' mouth, especially in the blue ribbon hunts, because you wound up judging the same dog over a period of time, several times.
Right.
And I had a handler tell me one night that they needed to get a bunch of new judges because I had learned the dogs as well as the handler. he struck a dog that night that wasn't his. And he said, that was my, I said, no. Well, about that time, his dog opened twice, probably a quarter of a mile to the left. And I said, that's two barks there on your dog over here to the left. And so he was complaining that the judges that was judging regular had learned the dogs as good as the handlers, and that was taking the advantage away from them. But anyway, that I had a lot of good experiences with fellas, and I think back about them. The only mistake I've made, let me rephrase that. One of the biggest mistakes. I'm not the only one. I wished I had taken a little spiral notebook and written down the three or four dogs, however many was on the cast, and who won it, and the cast, and then jot down anything that happened out of the ordinary, because I could have written a book. And you know, I think back, and now I'm starting to forget some of the dogs' names, people's names. But over the years, you know, there were several. I judged a lot of cast, and got a lot of memories. Thank goodness, I haven't lost all my memory yet. Yeah. But it's there's a lot of good fun. A lot of fun. I had a good time.
You judged some outlaws back in that day too. You had the Jacksons and.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but I got along good with Doug and Junior. I guess you want a few little stories told as we go here.
Oh yeah, I love them Jackson stories.
The first night I judged Junior, Doug went along as a spectator. They had just started getting into the PKC hunts, and he was running Hooper that night, and we were on a little creek, and. I had been on it before. The guide that took me in there, good guide, there's always generally three, two or three coon. But anyway, old Hooper was struck, and he was going like 2, 3, 4 minutes between barks, and we were starting to walk. They were getting away from us, and we was walking. And at some time in the history there, there had been a little flood, and down this stream it had washed up a little rubber rabbit, and there it sat. And then Junior said, well, boys, right there's what old Hooper's been running all night, that rubber rabbit. He said he finally got it caught. I'll never forget that. I laughed, because, you know, everybody, a lot of the judges didn't want to judge Junior. They had heard stories about Doug and Junior, and, you know, and I got along fine with them, respected them, and I didn't have any problems with them. And of course, Doug hunted old Whitey and Junior Box and Little Box and Eileen. And so, yeah, I was out with those fellas, and got to hunt judge several times, got to judge Dave Jubers, Russ Beller, the Demon. And I got along all right with those guys. I didn't have problems with them. Pretty much just, you know, judged it the way it was, brought them in the way it was supposed to be, the card. That was my goal, was win or lose, the fellas need to come in and know they got exactly what they deserved in the cast.
Right.
And that was my objection, to go out there and give them exactly what they had coming to them. And no, I got along with them. I had, and like I said, I've pleasure hunted with some of them, and enjoyed that as well. And got invited to go pleasure hunt with a lot of the fellas out of state, invited me to their place. And one guide in southern Alabama, I've hunted several times back, went down there and hunted for Randy Williams. He guided for me out of Jakin, out of Blue Ribbon Hunt. and we hunted the Tom Bigby River bottoms down there, and that was some of the best hunting that I'd ever been in. Big timber, quiet, no highways, no house dogs, and so I went back down. He invited me down, and Ernie Mayfield and I went down there, I know, three or four times, and we had a good time hunting down there. That was just nice country to hunt.
I grew up two or three hours north of there, so I'm pretty familiar with it, with that area.
Okay.
That's some of my favorite hunting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was good down through there. Butler, all that down in there. We hunted all that area down in there on the river. And then we had a hunting club, heard we were down there, and they stopped in. We was there at Randy's camp, and they wanted us to come down and pleasure hunt. They said they'd feed us. They were turkey hunters, but they wanted to try to thin out some of the coon population. And so we was down there a night, and we had a good time down there as well.
Hmm.
Just good people. And
I'm sure you've seen some real coon treeing contests.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is there any that really just stands out, or any dogs that's always just stood out?
Well, one of my favorite dogs to listen to, David Green, had a little Walker male dog called Singer. He had probably the prettiest tenor ball mouth on him. He'd get off, go hunting, get off by himself. And occasionally he would get out of the pocket. And even on a timeout, Eddie Clinton handled him quite a bit. And an hour would get him. He was hard to gather up. And of course, we weren't using all the electronics that they have today on the dogs. The tracking devices were there, but they weren't allowed to use them on a cast. And I remember the first GPS, Guy Manning drew me for a judge at the World Hunt. Guy lives in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, I don't know if it was his son or nephew, Richie, had a GPS. He set that thing. We hunted a river bottom down around Benton, and we went away from the truck the whole 2 hours hunting. And when the hunt was over, Richie said, do you care if I guide you back to the truck? And I said, well, no, you know, help yourself. I'd never seen any of that GPS work. And shoot, he walked us right back to the truck just slick as a whistle. So
I couldn't imagine going hunting that one again.
Yeah, well, that's it. You get used to them,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure. But we didn't have them. I used to be very particular about reading a compass because I've seen a lot of casts that you had to have them to get out.
Right.
And Winter Classic one year was a memorable hunt. It rained down there. Starkville, that whole area was just water. And the guide I had that night, we waded everywhere from knee to chest deep water the whole 2 hours. And it was floating. They had logged it, and there was literally treetops and logs we were crawling over floating. And we actually made a tree on a hollow tree. The dogs were trying to tree into a hole on a hollow tree swimming.
Hmm.
I was wore out when I got done with 2 hours in that wet mess. And so, yeah, I've seen, and it wasn't, I don't know if the guy didn't know any other hunting, but the final cast that same hunt, a guide lived down in the Knoxville Wildlife Area, and he guided, and he put us in good hunting, a little water, but nothing serious. And I've been in about every kind of condition. I've waded beaver water and cottonmouth, and had my mind maybe alligator, but I know we hunted in Louisiana, and a game warden had just seen a big one cross the road, and when we come out with a cast.
Hmm.
And but anyway, I judged for the Pro Night Hunters organization for a while as well, and of course most of those, not all of them, they had one in Ashland, Ohio, but they hunted mostly in the South, and I judged several of those. They were a money hunt, did not have a registration with them, but just strictly a money hunt. And a lot of the same fellows that was running the Blue Ribbon hunts at that time hunted in them. And so I got to see some of the same dogs and the work. But Singer was one I remembered. John Wick, you could always depend on John to have a good hound. He'd have a good mouth, a good locating bark, and a chop mouth tree dog. James Merchant, about the same way. James always had a dog that was respectable. You enjoyed judging a dog that James would have.
Hey guys, next time you're in the market for some new hunting supplies, head on over to Conkey's Outdoors. Whether it's a light, boots, dog leash, Garmin, or any other kind of hunting accessories, they can take care of you. Conkey's is a family-owned business that strives on excellent customer service and guarantees fast delivery every time. The next time you're over in Hastings, Florida, stop by or give them a call at 904-692-1568. Thanks.
Magnum Mike, Ed Yates' Magnum Mike dog. I judged him I don't know how many times. And between him and Adios Lightning, those two dogs would punish you because they would get off somewhere in the country and get treed. You're going to have to walk. And Lightning, he could get off and get treed, and you could literally walk for 30, 40 minutes and stop and listen, and he didn't sound like you had gained much on him. Hmm. I mean, he had a good carrying mouth. He'd get off in there and get treed. Good about having a coon. Little Mike, Magnum Mike, he'd do the same thing. He'd get off in there and get a coon treed. He didn't have near the mouth that Lightning did, but he was good about having a coon. Demon, Russ Beller's little old Demon dog. He could tree outside your bedroom window and probably wouldn't wake you up. He didn't call a lot of dogs to him, but he was good about having a coon. I always enjoyed judging him. And that brings back a memory. I believe it was Kokomo, Indiana, Blue Ribbon Hunt. I had Demon Russ, and Demon was treed, and we were shining, and Russ said, "Here he is, Judge, come here." So I walked around on that side, and he got me in the worst briar thicket I had ever been in my life. And just as soon as I got in there, he shut his light off and walked out of there. We never did find the coon. And I'm pretty sure Russ was just standing over there laughing. He got me in that briar thicket anyway. But just things like that have stayed in my mind. I've just laughed about him because, you know, he got me.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. But, you know, there's a few things, and I don't know how much you judge, Mason, but there's a few things that as hard as you try, you can't prevent happening on a cast, regardless how hard you try. There were six of us walking in dry leaves one night. Two dogs struck deep, and we're walking to them, and the third man struck his dog. And I didn't hear it. And I'm sure he didn't, but what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, six guys in dry leaves crunching. But anyway, I always, when anything like that happened, I always let them know when the cast was over. They didn't pull one over on me. I knew they'd done it. I just knew there wasn't anything I could do about it.
Steve told me a story the other day about him getting by with something. You pulled him out over to the side at the end of the cast and said, I know what you done. You might have got by with it, but I know what you've done.
Yeah, there were some things. I mean, you couldn't help it. You know, you knew what the intent and what happened, but you couldn't do anything about it. And but anyway, that was just part of the game.
Yeah.
And Steve and Randy both. I enjoyed hunting with those guys. The Cindy female that they had, that was a female that came from our country up here. A good friend of mine, Gary Mickle, had bought, and we bought her in South Mississippi, and they wound up buying her, and I think they won Missouri High in the open event money that year with her, and they enjoyed hunting her, had her there for a while. But Randy and I was we'd take I was hunt director, and I took, I believe, eight casts from the World Hunt at Mayfield, up to the bottom of Paducah, and they had to go to the club there, and then Randy would judge one of the second round, and I would judge one of the second round, and I always felt comfortable with Randy out there with the scorecard, because he was a good judge. Randy done a good job, and I always enjoyed them guys, him and Steve both.
There's another one that done a bunch of judging back then that lives right here close, and a real good friend of mine. I'm sure you remember Kevin Robertson.
Remember the name, yes. Yes, remember being around Kevin some. Not a lot, but yeah, I think he started judging more after I kind of quit. He came in after that period of time.
Right.
And Scott Bates. Scott used to travel with me. And like the Blue Ribbon Hunts, the club would furnish a couple judges and or so, whatever we needed. And Scott would go with me and travel. Scott was a good judge, done a good job for me.
Yeah. And, you sent me some pictures earlier of the 89, 90, and maybe 92 World Finals. Do you remember any of those in them pictures?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, Ralph Ogden won, I believe, in 90. He was from Virginia. And I remember I come in, I had him the second round on Tuesday night, I believe. And we were treeing a lot of coon in oaks. Coons was feeding acorns, feeding oaks, and a lot of trees, coons wasn't there. And that little poly female of his, she was treeing coon and having them. And I got in that morning back to the club there at Mayfield, and Roy Tramble asked me, he said, "Did you see anything impressive tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, I had a little walker female second round. If something major don't happen, might win this hunt." And he said, "Why is that?" And I said, "She's accurate, and she trees a feeding coon. She's got a coon, and you know, them old coon and acorns are bad about moving and don't leave much scent, I guess, to go on. But yeah, that was a good little female. I enjoyed that one. Of course, I was lucky enough to be judging the night Dave Luckett won the second time World Hunt with Old Duke.
Mm-hmm. I had David on here a few weeks ago. He talks about that cast.
Yeah. Yep. That was a good one. Voile's Jar had been treed. Clay was running him, and 2 minutes got him. And if it hadn't have got him, he had a coon, he would have won the World Hunt. But I remember the 2 minutes got him, and Dave come in there and won it with Duke. So that was good. And of course, Terry Nix, the year he won it with Jar, that cast, dogs was split up everywhere, and he got off in there, trailed pretty good little ways in there and treed, and he had a double. I remember that he had a double there at the end of the hunt when the night he won it. So a lot of memories. I go to thinking back to dogs, guys that I judged. You know, just good fellows, you know, good guys.
Mm-hmm. Is there any specific cast that you remember that's always kind of stood out as far as dog work or anything goes?
We had, I think the most single coon we ever treed on a cast was six, and that was in Louisiana, Delhi, Louisiana, I believe. We was hunting the Tensaw Wildlife Refuge. And we was in water all night, ankle to knee deep. I mean, a lot of it wasn't terrible bad, but I had Mike. I had Buddy Gilbert's Eagle Dog. I had four Walker male dogs. I'm trying to think of the other two, but those dogs kind of split up and treed, had coon all night. And the last tree was Magnum deep. Just could barely hear him, and Jerry was hunting him. Jerry Booker was hunting him. When we got in there, he had coon, and he won the cast. But I think that was there were six single coon treed in the 2 hour cast time. That's one I remember. A lot of walking, a lot of water, but you know, just a lot of nights. Dogs, maybe one dog in the cast would impress you, or you know, And I'll be very honest. I've had some casts where there was three out of the four dogs that were in the magazine that were disappointing. You know, they just had bad nights.
Right.
And you know, and but I, on the most part, I they got the job done. But I've seen some of them when kind of disappointed you. You know, you was thinking about going. Johnny Hindman run Hillbilly Mac, and that's one dog that I don't know how many hunts I was at, and he never did draw me for a judge. Raby Smith had the old Hillbilly Mac dog. I never did get to go out with him. And Raby was a super nice guy. And of course, John, I judged John. You think back some of the fellas, Hoss Gaines, hunted there in, from Tennessee, Tam Young, I had Tam and Clay. I could go on and on and on as I sat here and go to thinking of the fellas I've had that, you know, have hunted for years.
Right.
I don't know of any, I can't think of any just absolute cast that, other than I remember the one where we treated six singles, but, you know, I've seen dogs on dry nights when three of the dogs couldn't run a track in an old dry cornfield, and you'd have one that was striking, treeing, and having coons. You know, you just,
it's crazy how one can do that and other three can. I've seen it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Fellow from down around Zanesville. He had a dog he called Troubles. Sunny Place was his name. I'm just thinking this, remembering this stuff as we go here. And that was, he done that. It was summertime, it was a hunt, state hunt. And he run and treed coon that night in old dry field, cornfields that those other dogs just, they just couldn't handle it. And so, yeah, you wonder why, you know, some dogs got ability. Some dogs I've seen in water so much better than others, you know. And, of course, Pac-Man, you know, we walked a slough one night. It was on the wrong side of a slough to him tree. We could shine the tree from the side we was on, and Dave was running him. Dave Jewers was running him, and we got done shining. He just hollered, Pac-Man, come here. And he hit that water and swam across that slough to us, just, you know, and he was an every breath hard little tree dog, but they had him broke. They had him to where they could handle him. And, yeah, he was a good, my son, Brian, went with me on a hunt in, I believe West Point, Mississippi. And he went along on the cast, and I had Pac-Man that night. Dog split up. I left him at the tree, or he went to a split tree. And he told me later, he said, that dog hurt my ears. He was a tree dog. Hmm. But JC, he always had a competitive hound. JC Ellis, if he had a hound in there, he'd be competitive. Of course, Ernie Mayfield, my buddy, hunted Lil. And Ernie and I, we pleasure hunted together, went to Alabama on several trips, Mississippi a time or two. Ernie had old Lil was a coon hound. Some of these dogs are dogs that will treat coon, but she was a coon. She was a coon dog. She got in there and got her job done. It was a good little female, but I always enjoyed with her.
Yeah.
One other, I guess, an accomplishment that I was involved in was the PKC Tree and Walker Hall of Fame. We put that thing together. We got a committee together. I was president of the Walker Association, and we got a committee together. We wanted this thing set up to where the dog had to do something to deserve being in the Hall of Fame instead of making it a popularity contest of the owner or handler. We wanted the dog to get it. And the first thing we done was, we honored a bunch of the hounds that the fellows were hunting, ancestors of, you know, Hickory Nut Harry and Joe House's dogs. And, you know, Zeb, a lot of the dogs at that time was being hunted. So first thing we tried to do was recognize the breeders that had been at it for years. And James Merchant, that was another one in the Walker breed. So we got through that, and then we started nominating and electing a male and female each year to go in the Walker Hall of Fame. And be honest with you, I don't know if that's still continuing now or not. I really don't. I don't know.
I know. We, just the the PKC Hall of Fame does, but I don't know if just the Tree and Walker Hall of Fame still exists or not.
Okay, I don't either. Ray Lofton was big help in that. He, like I said, we had a committee, and Ray was good about gathering up hunt information, winnings, pedigrees, and stuff like that. Ray helped a good bit on that, and Ray, he was hunting a little female called Sneaky Bee at the time, and some of the hunts. But we got that going, and it was going good there for a while. Like I say, I don't know. I've not been involved for a while to really know.
Yeah.
When I was judging, I don't know, this was probably before your time. They had the World Hunt like at Aurora, Mayfield there at the fairgrounds, Graves County Fairgrounds, or Aurora there at the center in the indoor tennis building. And it would draw a crowd of people, big crowds. I mean, they would have the cast would draw out. They'd have live entertainment. They'd have bingo and stuff going on. And you'd come in from your first cast, and the building's still crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of vendors. And that's all kind of different today than it used to be. But
and that's kind of sad to me that weekend I judged the finals. There was you got the final nine prior to that, and then the final three. And other than the handlers and then some of their family, some of them had family there, there's less than 20 people there combined Saturday.
Yep.
I mean, that's sad to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. The last I ran out to Salem there just a few years ago, and when they drew out the dogs out to the outlying clubs, and there was one lady and her daughter, and all the vendors had their tables covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was a family affair before. I mean, but big time. There was people there, and it has changed. It has changed over the years. For whatever reason.
I think social media has a lot to do with it. Everybody can sit at home on their phone or TV and watch it. So,
yeah, that's contributed to it, I'm sure. And of course, a lot of the. By having the hunt in the same area, a lot of them learn all the outlying clubs. So as soon as they go in and enter and draw, they know where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And, at Aurora and Mayfield, Murray, on back to Murray when he was having it at Murray, about everybody was in there for the draw when they drew the cast,
Right.
And then they left. But, the things have changed. Of course, everything changes in time. That just goes with it.
Hey guys, next time you're in the market for some new hunting gear, head on over to coonhuntersupply.com and check out the Razor hunting gear line. Razor has partnered up with Yoder Nylon to bring some of the sharpest and best designed briar-proof gear on the market. They have their own line of hunting gear like coats, bibs, chaps, vests, and more. Also, check out the newly released Razor Z1 light. It includes a double walk light, bright double red lights, tight and bright main beam, and a razor sharp green laser. Head on over to coonhuntersupply.com and get yours ordered today.
But I've a lot of memories. We used to get all the dogs drawn out and out of there at the fairgrounds, Graves County, Mayfield, in 30, 40 minutes. We'd draw, forget how many cast, and we'd have them out of there and gone. We had that down to a science, getting them out of there, and which the hunters appreciated. They're anxious, they're ready to go, want to get in the woods. So that all worked good. And of course, we had other hunts there with Walker Days. Then Walker Days that was in Washington, Indiana, there in southern Indiana, Davies County. We had it there, and I met a lot of nice fellows there, coon hunters. I'm still friends with some of them today, Roger Boyd. Ray Raber, those guys out there, they Michael and they all pitched in, and we had a good hunt out there. Don, Mike's dad, that had old Boz, them guys worked together, done a lot of work, got our Walker Days hunt. It was at Princeton one year. We had a good Walker Days hunt at Princeton, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's another hunt that's sort of went away. I was in the finals of it last year, and only four dogs showed up.
Yeah. Well, it used to be big. DeCoin, they went to DeCoin, Illinois, at the fairgrounds. It was Walker Days. And, it was a big hunt there. So it's, you know, times change. Economy makes a lot of difference in it. And
right.
different factors that changes it. But I guess pretty much the heyday, the glory days was about in the era that I was judging. And of course, it carried on there for a few more years. But yeah, like you said, you go out there with the final cast. These guys are running for several tens of thousands in first place, and there's no room for an error.
Right.
You gotta keep your ducks in line, and it's not easy to do. But we've been fortunate, I guess, to get it done without any big major deals.
Yeah, I try to tell everybody I'm gonna be as honest and do the best I can. But we're only human at the end of the day.
And yeah, we're subject to mistakes. And the best thing over the years, I found out judging, if you made one, correct it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let it, if you see you made a bad call, correct it right now. You have to change it on the scorecard, change it, but get it right. Make sure it's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had that happen a time or two. And then, like I said, I immediately said, hey, I've made a mistake. And just get it changed.
Yeah.
So, we're human.
Usually when you do change it, the other one is going to get the better end of the deal, don't like it, but right's right.
They at the end of the day, they know everybody got what they deserved if the scorecard came in right. And, you know, that's just I remember the Nationals 1 year at Chickasaw State Park in Tennessee, a young man from Pennsylvania had qualified for that. He was from Pennsylvania. And he had left early that morning, driven all day, and he came in here that evening, and he drew out with Wayne Green. And, of course, he had seen Wayne's picture in the magazine. Wayne was running, in the pro hunts all the time and handling dogs. And that blowed his mind. This young man drove all the way down there, and the first thing he done when the first dog had opened was Wayne's dog, and this boy struck his dog. And I knew it was Wayne's. I judged the dog before, and I'm just getting ready to say something, and Wayne said, Judge, you realize all that is whatever dog he was hunting at the time? And I said, yes, I do. And that young man, when his dog finally opened, he didn't sound a thing like the dog that Wayne was running. And he told me, he came to me and he said, it just blowed my mind. He said, I would have probably struck any dog with bark. He said, I drove all the way down there from Pennsylvania. And he said, draw out with Wayne Green. He said, it just blowed my mind. he said, it got him. Of course, I had to scratch him. I didn't have any other choice but to scratch him. But oh yeah, that I've seen a lot of stuff happen like that. I used to mess with the handlers if I could, just a little bit. Eddie Simmons was about to win a cast one night, and he hadn't started the 2 hour watch. And of course, back then the judge didn't alert him when there was 10 minutes left or 20 minutes left. It was their responsibility to keep the running time on the hunt, and. We were down to the end, getting down toward the end of the cast, and Eddie was standing right beside me. He was trying to sneak a peek at my stopwatch. I knew what he was doing. And the dog he was handling, I forget what dog it was. It was Blue Dog. I remember that. Might have been Basil Kittle's dog. But anyway, the six was about to catch him. Well, it got down under 6 minutes left in the hunt, and I kept looking at that stopwatch. And I told Eddie later, he kicked that one mud puddle dry. Back and forth, he was nervous as he could be, and the six couldn't catch him. And I just kept looking at that stopwatch, and then I had Eddie a nervous wreck, but laughed about it later.
Oh, and Eddie's then, a good man.
No, he is. He's a dandy. I like Eddie. Always have. Dave Juvers one night was hunting Doug Hickerson's Nancy female, and she treed a coon right at the end of the hunt. And there was when he handled her, I don't think there was another dog there with her. I think she's by herself. But anyway, there was like 30, 45 seconds, something like that left, and the hunt's over. And I made Dave line her up like it's going to make him cut her again. And he knew it was close. And he said, "You're going to make me turn her loose again." He started in. I said, "No, Dave, the hunt's over." But I had him. I had him. She had him by the collar. He was holding her by the collar, ready to cut her loose. I just messed with him. But he had a few words after he figured out what I'd done there. But anyway, I used to have some fun with things like that. But that didn't matter. But yeah, you just and I'm sure you know. I always tried to sew up any loopholes. I didn't try to leave open things for handlers to get you on,
mm-hmm.
because there'd generally be one or two on a cast. If you made a boo-boo, why, they're going to make you pay for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, especially just, this West Tennessee bunch I had to deal with.
No, they're everywhere. It's not just West Tennessee. Or they used to be. Let me put it that way.
Oh, yeah. They are.
Yeah. Yeah, we.
I don't think it's near as bad as it probably used to be. Just listening to stories, it seems a lot more laid back than what it probably was 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was serious when I was judging. I mean, it was a serious deal. And, you know, there was a lot of, like I said, advertised dogs, old Loomis, Carl Carroll's Loomis dog. And he was off a tree one night. And that was the second round, I believe, of the World Hunt. And when we got to the tree, he was down at a hollow log drinking water. And I minused him, and it cost him the cast win. And he went back to the tree after he got his drink of water. But when we got there, he wasn't treed. And Carl finally told me, between cast, he fed him a Snickers candy bar. And I'd say the sugar had him dry.
Yeah,
that was just you know, something. And Carl finally admitted, he said, I shouldn't give it to him. He said, I thought maybe a little energy, but you know, the dog normally, old Loomis was right on a tree, but he was off there getting a drink of water. You got to do what's going on when you get there. Yeah, you know, that's all you can do.
Bad break, but I tell him,
part of the game. Yep. Yes, sir.
Oh, but, is that the same Loomis dog that Dunlap's hunted quite a bit?
English dog, nice looking English dog. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Joey Ludwig kind of handled him a good bit. Carl handled him, and Joey Ludwig, I don't remember. Maybe one of the Dunlap boys did handle him some. Yeah.
I was thinking they said they did later on.
Yeah, they may have. Let's see, Edgar Trent handled for Carl. I'm trying to think back now. The handlers and dogs, Patch, he had an English female, but Patch, she was in the final four at the national championship in Kinder, Missouri, the year Adios Lightning won it. Patch was on that cast, and I think Joey Ludwig was handling her that night, if I remember right. But that was a tense cast. We were in an area that a lot of water, and it was Lightning and Jubal, a little English dog with John Scott's, and Sean Maddox was handling Jubal. And if we don't see the coon, Jubal wins it. And if we see the coon, Lightning's got it. And Owen Yandell from Arkansas, he was my backup, but we still had two dogs out at large. But there was like dikes down there. They flooded this for duck hunting. This was federal property, I guess. But anyway, I told Owen, I said, "Stay where you can hear me if I need another set of eyes." I had myself covered there. But Sean was a gentleman. We had about give up. Well, Ron Gillum was handling Lightning. Had quit. It was a big old woolly tree, and we was in water about knee deep. And I finally got that coon to look at me. And I shut my light off real quick, and I said, "Here he is, boys." And when they got over there, and I flipped my light on and hit the squaller, and he looked, Sean seen him, and he just put his hand out and shook Ron's hand. He said, "You won it." He didn't go. He could have went blind, but I had Owen over there in the wings waiting if I needed that other set of eyes. But,
yeah,
no, he was a gentleman about it. He just shook Ron's hand, said, "Congratulations. That was the national championship at Kinder." But, yeah, I've seen a lot of good sportsmanship. I've seen some a little bit, not near as good, but for the most part, you know, everybody's been pretty good. Another fellow I always enjoyed judging, Bruce Gillum.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce was a dandy. Always had a black dog of some kind, but I always enjoyed Bruce. He was a fun fellow to go to cast with.
I need to get Bruce on here. He like I said, he wasn't too far from me when I was from Alabama, or when I lived in Alabama.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. One other memory, that was in Starkville, the year I told you we had all the water. This old boy that lived down in Knoxville guided us that night. I think Kenner, the boy that handled some dogs for Bruce, was on the cast. Buddy Gilbert's Eagle Dog was on the cast. Maybe Bob Edwards was handling the dog. I don't know if Doug Hickerson or Dave. I don't know. But anyhow, we went in there that night, and we had a good hunt, no problems. And when the hunt was over, the dog were all at large. And the guide said, "We'll be right here. This is where you need to come back to." He said, "There's no, we're going to have to go the opposite direction." The dogs were away from the direction, away from the truck. And so anyway, they all went after their dogs. And this guy said, "You know, I guided down in here for," and I'm not going to say which organization, but he said, "I guided down in here for their hunt, world hunt down here." And he said, "I saw a fist fight. I saw a guy pull a knife on another guy." And he said, "I got to thinking the scene for the kind of money these fellas are running for, what am I going to see happen tonight?" And he said, "You guys have come down here, and everybody's been respectful. You've all had a good time." He said, "I couldn't believe it." He said, "I didn't know what I'd say after what he'd witnessed before." So, yeah, I said, "But this is the way it's supposed to be."
Yeah,
everybody's supposed to get along and accept what they get. And but yeah, I'll never forget that. He thought he's going to see everything but a murder, I reckon. And that final cast hunting for that kind of money, he said. But yeah, it was a good deal. Yeah, you know, a lot of that.
For the most part, they're mostly gentlemen now. And biggest thing is, as a judge, is setting the tone early, keeping them straight. They respect you.
Yeah.
Then,
oh yeah.
And everything else to shake out.
Yep. Yeah. There's a few stories I could tell that I'm not going to on this podcast. So if we cross paths sometime, I'll sell some dandies there, but I'm not going to put it on this podcast. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, we for the most part they were good.
Another one that ran real hard in that time that did a lot of winning was Ronnie Nickens. I'm sure you judged him plenty.
Oh yeah. Ronnie's what was the name of that little female? Shauna, something
Sheena.
Like that.
Sheena.
Mm-hmm. Sheena. She's a little bad about getting out of the pocket, and as long as you had action going on around fairly close, she'd get off and get treed. And I've seen the hour catcher a time or two. The little Patty female that Frankie won the world hunt with, him and JC, she'd get off herself. You send her north to go hunting, and she may be treed south, you know. And she was a little bit that way. But, yeah, I judged him, Ronnie Nickens. Tommy Monsieur had a female, Walker female, he called Black Gal. And she done some winning. Nice female. She's on the final four of the year, a year or two before I judged the final, the year that Alabama Eagle won it. She was on the final cast that year, and with her. And Tommy, I always enjoyed visiting with Tommy. And I say Black Gown, he had another. I can't think of the other dog he had. He hunted two. He had an English dog he handled or hunted there as well. But, yeah, there are just a lot of them. You know, you go, like I said, I got to thinking back. I wish I'd have kept a little better record of the dogs I judged and unusual things that maybe happened on a cast. And I'd have had a 3-hour podcast for you tonight.
No, I've enjoyed it. Like I said, there's been many people that's mentioned your name about trying to get you on. I'm glad we finally got it done. I was actually in the truck with Steve when he called you last week.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Like I said, I've got a lot of friends and acquaintances through the coon hunting world, and just mostly super nice people. And you know, I just I'm glad some of them still remember me. I guess they're not too mad at me about anything.
No, I've never heard anybody say a cross word about you, so you done something right.
Well, I appreciate that. I do. I try to give everybody a fair shake, and I don't. I honestly don't know of a cast that I brought it in that wasn't right. You know, I don't. I was raised that way, to be fair and honest, and I guess that entered into part of it. But that's just the way I'm wired up, I guess.
Yeah, that's the only way to be.
Yep.
I have enough bad luck and karma as it is. I don't need adding any on top of myself.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, don't bring any of it on yourself.
So it's not worth not doing right to me.
Yep. I know what you mean.
So once again, Tim, I appreciate it. And is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think we about drained this old memory of mine. I mean, if I sit here a while, I know I can think of something else. But it's been several years, but they were good ones, yeah. And I enjoyed it, and appreciated you contacting me. And I hope some of the fellows that hear it will have some good memories back that I've judged in the past anyway, and hope they're getting along good as well in life.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure, and it's really impressive how well you remembered a lot of these names and dogs and details on these casts. I hope when I'm 75, if I make it that far, that I can still do it.
Well, there's more stories. You know, the longer I sit here, I think think of things that happened, but maybe we'll cross paths down the road somewhere, and I can tell you a few more of them.
That'll work. Well, once again, thank you, Tim, and.
All right.
Take it easy.
Welcome. All righty. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Bye.
Do you need a sponsor for the next hunting event at your local club? Joey Dog Food would love to help you out. Head over to the contact page on our website, click the sponsorship application button, and fill out the form. We will then contact you and let you know if we'll be able to sponsor your event. Applications must be submitted at least 60 days prior to event. So head on over to joydogfood.com and fill out the form today.